The next case is 090211, National Solid Waste Management Association versus Stark Tuscarawas Wayne Joint Solid Waste Management District. Mr. Fay.
Thank you. Without these, I can't possibly see my outline. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Terry Fay, and I'm the attorney for the appellant National Solid Waste Management Association. Since the parties agree that the EPA director is not an indispensable party in this proceeding, unless the court has questions about that issue, I'd like to move on to the merits issues of the case. Hearing none.
Impact of that agreement, in your view?
I don't think the agreement has any effect on the merits issues of the case, Your Honor.
Well, didn't the Court of Appeals say that he was a necessary party?
Your Honor, the Court of Appeals actually said that the EPA director was an indispensable party. The analysis is twofold, as the court knows. Under Rule 19, first you decide whether the EPA director was a necessary party, then you turn to the indispensability analysis. The EPA director didn't have a dog in this hunt. The EPA director didn't have an interest that was affected by the litigation. And the reason, the quintessential reason for that is, and excuse me, I'm a bit nervous. The quintessential reason for that is the EPA director has nothing to do with the local rules that we challenged. He didn't promulgate them. He didn't enforce them. He doesn't have the power to enforce them. Therefore, whether the courts declared they were unenforceable or not doesn't in any effect impinge upon the director's interests. That being the case, it's hard for counsel. I mean, there's no disagreement between Mr. Connors and myself about the status of the EPA in this matter. The EPA director had no interest, and there could not have been a necessary party, much less an indispensable one, whose absence required the dismissal of the case. I think the court should note, EPA, Rule 19 is about not surprising the litigants and other people and have interest determined without everybody being present in the trial court. And the EPA director knew all about this case. In fact, he appeared specially through the Attorney General's office to quash a subpoena. And although it's not on the record, I asked the EPA to intervene and they wouldn't. So, I mean, in short, this is not a case that implicates any of the interests that are protected by Rule 19.
Well, let me stop you there. You're referring to this case, and your proposition of law, of course, refers to this case, but we write principles of law here that are important to others. Is your statement of the indispensable party, is that a principle of law to you, or do we just write it for this case?
Your Honor, the first principle of law here is that a person who has no interest in pending litigation cannot be an indispensable party whose absence requires dismissal.
And so under that principle of law, there may be instances where the EPA is an indispensable party.
There may indeed, but the broad principle of law for the court to apply here and to affirm is that whether it's an administrative agency or anybody else, a person who has no interest in the pending litigation cannot be an indispensable party for purpose of Rule 19 that requires dismissal of the underlying case.
Counsel, moving along then to the second proposition, the joint amended plan, which is kind of an unusual animal in this case, if I read it correctly, is the joint amended plan, in your view, the EPA's plan or the district's plan that's been approved by the EPA?
No, I don't think there's any question about that, Your Honor. The EPA director who negotiated the case, strike that, who negotiated that memorandum of understanding, clearly said that this was his plan, this was the EPA's plan, and you don't have to take his word for it. The statutory scheme is clear as well. Under the statutory scheme, when a district fails to submit either an initial plan or an amended plan and get it approved by Ohio EPA, Ohio EPA has a statutory duty to issue a plan for the district, and that's what happened here, unquestionably. This was the EPA's plan. This was not the district's plan. It's also clear in the record that the EPA discussed the amended plan, cooperated with the district to issue it, but the plan is issued by the director by an administrative order that's dated December 22nd, 2006. It's in the record.
But so didn't that memorandum of understanding let the Stark County promulgate their own rules?
The memorandum of understanding
gave them until November 30th, didn't it?
Your Honor, the memorandum of understanding says that if the district wants to adopt rules, it may do so until November 30th. That's correct, Your Honor.
And they did.
That's right. They adopted rules sometime in early November of 2006.
And why aren't those rules then in effect?
Because 343.01 on its face says that they are not. Revised Code Section 343.01G is the rulemaking power grant to the districts. And what it says on its face is, to the extent authorized by the plan in effect for the district can both promulgate and also enforce rules. Necessarily then, if there is no plan in effect for the district that authorizes either the promulgation or enforcement of rules, the rules become unenforceable. And that's what happened in this case, pure and simple. And the court actually need not go beyond that issue. The statute is clear on its face, and as this court has said on many occasions, clear statutes are to be applied and not interpreted. And the statutory language could not be more clear. It begins, to the extent authorized, and it goes on to talk about by what, authorized by the plan, written by the district, in effect for the district. And that plan terminated certainly by December 22nd of 2006, when the state EPA director issued his plan for the district. His plan does not have an authorization of district rulemaking, and by statute cannot. The legislature said in 3734, I think it's 57D, that when the director issues a plan, he cannot include rulemaking for the affected district.
But if he entered into an agreement to let the local agency make their own rules, then there were rules in place and there was no need for him to promulgate any rules.
Your Honor, first of all, the memorandum of understanding, the only thing it says on the subject is if the district wants to adopt rules, it needs to do so by November 30th. It doesn't say anything about the fate of those rules after the EPA director issues his plan. And I submit,
Your Honor, if the rules had been promulgated prior to the memorandum of understanding, the director wouldn't have any other rules. Am I right?
Let me see if I can answer that question this way. The memorandum of understanding dates back to 2005, September, I believe. It's in the record. At that point in time, and there's testimony in the record, the parties contemplated that the director would issue his plan at some point in the future, and until then, there would be rulemaking by the district, and the rules would come out in a fairly expedited fashion. That was the expectation of the parties, and that didn't happen. 2005 came and went without either an EPA plan or the district rulemaking. It wasn't until 2006 comes and there is pressure put on the district by the state, the EPA director, the EPA communicated its intent to issue a plan. In fact, it had that obligation from 98 forward and did not exercise it. So we come to 2006. There's no district rulemaking. Had the district adopted its rules in 2005, those rules would have been in effect. The district would have had the power to enforce them, but that's not what happened. Instead,
that's just my point. Had they done them prior to the memorandum of understanding, those would have been the rules that we're following, and the director wouldn't have issued any. He authorized or enters into a memorandum of understanding to authorize the local agency to promulgate rules until November 30th. They did promulgate the rules. And then the director promulgated other rules, which sort of superseded the local rules.
Your Honor,
that's what happened, isn't it?
Mostly, if I can add a little bit of clarification. First of all, the director doesn't have the power to authorize the writing of local rules. That's governed by statute. Revised codes.
So you're saying that the statute should control and the memorandum of understanding doesn't really have any effect here whatsoever?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Unquestionably, the statute does
control. Why did he sign it?
Well, Your Honor.
Didn't he sort of give some indication that that would be an opportunity to promulgate rules and an assent that it could be done?
We can certainly speculate about his intent, but you can read his testimony. And you can read the testimony of the chair of the district's board of directors. And and what emerges, at least to my eye, is he was under tremendous political pressure. The local politician, Senator Schering in particular, and I'm not sure whether this is prudential or jurisprudential of anything, but.
But we're bound by what's in the record, and one of the things in the record is a memorandum of understanding.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with you. But the memorandum of understanding.
The question is, what is the legal effect of the memorandum of understanding? And I'm taking from your answer,
sure.
You say it has none.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And Revised you just want us to look at the statute and move on in accordance with that and ignore the memorandum of understanding.
That's correct, Your Honor, for a very good reason. For that contract to have effect, the court would have to rule that the director by contract can change the results mandated by statute. And that would be a remarkable ruling. Were this court to recognize an administrative agency.
We've had some pretty remarkable rulings.
Perhaps so, Your Honor, but I urge you not to do that in this case.
Is this a matter for regional planning? I mean, if the local district wants to exclude plastic bottles or whatever regulations that it wants from its landfill, why can't it have a rule that says everybody else who wants to dump their garbage in our landfill should at least comply with what our rules are? What's wrong with a rule like that?
I think, Your Honor, what's wrong with it is that that's not the way the statutes have been written. The legislation that controls this doesn't give the individual counties or districts the power to exclude each other's waste, except under one very specific instance. It gives the districts the power to exclude each other's waste when they need the local disposal capacity to deal with local needs. The legislature has spoken to this issue.
That's the rule that was promulgated by the director, or is that in the statute?
That's in the statute, Your Honor.
Where is that?
It's in Revised Code Section 37, 34, I want to say 53 and 57. It's in the briefs, though. The legislative scheme, the districts were created in 1988 because there was a perceived disappearance of landfills in Ohio. And so the legislature did create this planning concept. It required the counties to come together and form planning districts and plan for the disposal of waste. And the legislature, this is all about administrative agencies like the district only having those powers conferred upon them by the General Assembly.
Counsel, I have a real basic jurisdictional question. The Court of Appeals found that the indispensable party had not been added and dismissed it and sent it back, did not rule on these assignments of error.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If we disagree with that and say that they were not an indispensable party, doesn't that end our inquiry and we send it back for them to rule on those assignments of error? Because they have not passed on them yet, and we don't know what they would do with them.
Your Honor, that's certainly a course that's available to the court, but I don't think it's a jurisdictional question. The court can, and on occasion has, although if you ask me for a case, one won't come to mind right now, but the court has the power to reach both the procedural issue that was determined by the Court of Appeals and the rest of the issues.
Normally we don't if they haven't been ruled on it by an appellate level. And not all these issues you're discussing with us now as to the merits were not reached. So it seems to me that if we decide that there is no jurisdictional bar, then the Court of Appeals needs to reach these, and then that may end it. You may find you all find some agreement in there and it doesn't come back up.
I understand the point, Your Honor. First of all, this court has the power to reach them. As a matter of jurisprudence, I understand the court does not regularly reach out and decide issues that the Court of Appeals did not decide. But here's the reason why you ought to do it in this case. as should be apparent from the amicus curiae briefs that were filed. This case is of interest to more than just the parties. It's in particular, it's of interest to all of the districts that export waste to the Stark-Tusk-Wayne district. And for a very good reason. Those districts have a planning responsibility that extends for a 10 or 15 year basis. They have to periodically tell Ohio EPA where their waste is going to go. The legislature has commanded this. These districts cannot do that unless they know whether their waste can go to the Stark-Tusk-Wayne district. Some of these districts are going to be submitting amended plans in the next several years, and they will not know, unless this court decides the merits issues, whether their waste can go to Stark-Tusk-Wayne landfills. Akron and Cleveland sends the majority of their wastes to these to that district and the three landfills in them.
But the Court of Appeals may make that same decision and decide they can.
I understand, Your Honor, but if you remand, then we will go through the Court of Appeals process again, which will take about 6 months. We will see, whoever loses will seek a review in this court. You may or may not accept, but however, whatever your ultimate decision is, that process will take longer than we have.
Is the director entering into memorandums of understanding with other districts, to your knowledge?
It's not in the record, but to my knowledge, he has not.
Has not?
He has not. This was a political deal, pure and simple. Senator Schering pressured EPA to enter into this memorandum of understanding. The former EPA director testified.
That's probably not in the record. Is that in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter of startlingly, it is.
It would be startling, yeah.
I asked, I believe, the chair of the commission, you know, what was going on here, and the chair of the commission said that, you know, unquestionably the intent was to place political pressure on the director. I was surprised to see that in a trial transcript. But
you've used your time, Mr. Fay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Connors.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Tom Connors, and I represent the Stark-Tuscarawas-Wayne Joint Solid Waste Management District. I would like to address first the recycling rule, which the district believes is in furtherance of both purposes
before
for
you,
which it has
before
jurisdiction.
Before you do that, I'd like to get your opinion on whether the joint amended plan is the EPA's plan or the local district's plan that's approved by the EPA.
I believe it is a joint plan of both the district and the EPA. However, there's no statutory provision that defines what that means.
So it's an unauthorized plan, statutorily unauthorized plan?
I won't go that far because it's just an unknown.
All right, so we have a strange animal here then.
Yes.
Then I would also like to ask you to address the jurisdictional question.
Yes.
If we agree with you two, your party's position seems to be agreement on that EPA is not an indispensable party. You agree that the trial court did not, or the Court of Appeals did not reach the other issues. And why should we not send it back per our usual practice?
That was my argument in the jurisdictional memorandum. I argued that this court only had authority to review, or appellate jurisdiction to review the first proposition and not the second.
Maybe you were right. Maybe we'll find you're right. If we find you're right, what do we do?
Well, when the court determined that I was not correct and accepted jurisdiction, I assumed that this court was exercising original jurisdiction, which it has four cases on review to complete. Now that's not addressed very often in this court's precedent, so I don't know what the limits are of that. And of course, the court could simply determine that that's not the case, but that was my assumption, that we are here on original jurisdiction on that proposition. So I originally had argued that the court didn't have jurisdiction. I had assumed that the determination was otherwise.
So if we end up agreeing that it should remand, are you still pushing that position, or are you arguing that we should decide the whole case now?
No, at this point, I accept the court's determination that they have original jurisdiction to complete this matter, and would argue that you certainly have the authority to do that and would actually request that that be done. With respect to the recycling rule, there are two purposes for which the district has jurisdiction, and this rule is in furtherance of both of those purposes. First, we have the purpose to provide for the management of solid waste within the territory for which we have jurisdiction. Second, we have the purpose of implementing a solid waste plan. This recycling rule is also authorized by our rulemaking authority, which builds on our jurisdictional power.
And if I understood Mr. Fay's argument, he suggested that suggestion of the local implementation of a local rule is in violation of state statute.
Yes, that his argument.
Address that argument.
Yes, sir. His argument is that because there is rulemaking authority to ensure capacity to enforce or implement our solid waste plan, that is somehow restricts or limits other rulemaking authority we have to govern the use of solid waste districts. We've got the power to do both. We're supposed to govern the use of facilities within our jurisdiction, and we're supposed to implement our plan. What he is suggesting to this court is that the one limitation for one purpose somehow limits our rulemaking authority, our general rulemaking authority, to govern use. And specifically, he is saying there is a limit on your authority to limit disposal of out-of-district waste under one element, and that limit is that it must be consistent with projections in your plan.
Counsel, looking at the statute, I know that your opposing counsel had cited to 34301G, and listening to what you just said, are you referring to the ability under Section H of that statute that allows you to enter into a contract for operation or maintenance of the waste facility, or is there a different section of the statute that you're relying on for your position?
I'm referring to G, which defines our rulemaking authority, and there's two elements: one, to govern use of facilities, and the second, to ensure capacity for our plan. Now, he's claiming there's a contradiction or a limitation, that they would be inconsistent. I would submit that they are different realms of authority, and that they can be reconciled. It unfortunately gets complicated, but I would point to the Dennis landfill case, which had a similar argument. There's two important functions for a district. One, you are to plan for solid waste that will exist in your district, and you've got to make sure you have enough capacity for that. The second purpose is you're supposed to govern the safe and sanitary management and use of solid waste districts. Two completely distinct purposes. It is true that you've got to define, you've got to make projections and define how much space you have. And if there's not enough space, or if there's, it actually says inconsistent with projections, which is very vague, you've got to step in and do something. That's one element of rule authority. However, there's an entirely different element of rule authority to govern use. In the Dennis landfill case, this argument was made. In Dennis landfill, the district identified landfills necessary to implement its plan. The landfill came and said, you didn't identify our landfill to implement your plan, therefore you may not implement certain siting rules that you want to impose on us. The court said, it's true that there are limits on siting authority for the one purpose, but it is also true that they have broader general authority to govern use. So we're going to allow the siting regulations to apply to landfills that are not part of or identified as necessary to the plan. I believe that that principle applies here. So the limitation that he's referring to does not limit our power to govern use. He also cites to rule 1.51, which says that if the you've got a specific provision, that somehow will limit the general provision. I would point out that 1.51 says that only may be done when the two are irreconcilable. Our authority to govern use is a broad authority, and it is necessary for, it was determined in the wisdom of the legislature that we would have that.
Council, could you enlighten us as to the real world outcome, if you prevail, what you would like to have approved is the memorandum of understanding, right?
Yes, well, okay. Yes, Your Honor.
And if that's in place, what impact, if any, does it have on the movement of the materials that are presently being disposed of for that region of the state?
I'm not certain how much of this is in the record. There was some testimony.
Well, what's your
my judgment,
best guess as to what would happen?
Not significant. Our purpose is not to try to restrict waste. Our purpose is to encourage recycling. We are a district that has two of the four largest landfills in the state. We get 20% or something of the state's waste. 1% of that solid waste is hazardous waste. It poses difficulties in management. Our citizens have come to our board and said, you want to encourage recycling, which is a major purpose of the statute of the EPA and hopefully everyone in the state. They say, well, if you're encouraging recycling, what good does it do us if we recycle and other districts don't? Many districts don't have landfills in their jurisdiction now because of the concentration of landfills, so they don't have incentive. We want to make sure that there remains some reason, incentive, to encourage them to recycle. Out of sight, out of mind.
Okay, I understand what you're trying to achieve, but what I'm asking you is, are plastic containers going to be piling up at the Cuyahoga County border, or are certain kinds of hazardous waste going to be setting out back of plants if you prevail, or is this all manageable and workable within the outcome that you're urging?
Yes, it's workable. There's other landfills, and it is not our purpose to accomplish that result. We only want to encourage them to get there. This is doable. There's many ways to achieve recycling rates. We
so
don't believe
other venues that are providing this less than desirable product that's coming into your district, they'll just have to put a little more effort into it.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. It's doable. Not only there's two ways of doing this. You achieve the recycling limits, or you have access, which is a very reasonable way of getting it. You leave dumpsters out in neighborhoods. That's another way of doing it. It's doable. Most districts can do this. We don't think that we are using, that this will somehow shut off the flow to our district, but we do want to encourage recycling.
Mr. Connors, I think the argument Mr. Fay made is that the rules that the local district have promulgated are ineffective because they were promulgated under a memorandum of understanding or pursuant to it, but the director superseded those by enacting department rules in December, and those are pursuant to statute. So those are the rules that control, and in effect, the director had no ability to enter into a memorandum of understanding. So the rules that you are speaking about, that you want enforced, don't have any legal effect, and our court is bound by the statutes of the state, which authorize the director to promote the rules, and they don't contain any of these limitations. Could you address that for me?
Yes, Your Honor. The EPA is authorized by statute in two places to enter into agreements of this nature. First, under the general rule, and then 3745, and then under 3734 regarding solid waste to guide local governments in and to further the purposes of the statute. The reason being, these are brutally complex statutes that are not easy to reconcile, and the hope would be that they would exercise their expertise, give us some guidance. And we went to them and said, we want to enforce local rules. We sat down, we entered into this agreement. The claim is that we're pressuring.
Counsel, right there, Justice Lanziger asked whether there are any other agreements like that, and you're saying that this is how you reached this agreement because of the statutory, trying to reconcile and reach the ultimate goal here, yet there's no other memorandums of understanding that do the same thing.
I'm not aware, I just don't know. It may well be that there are others. I'm not familiar with that. It's an authority that the EPA has. I would expect that they do.
Counsel, it appears that you wouldn't be here today if the district had been able to submit its own plan to the EPA and get it approved. But in at least the briefs indicate there was some sort of a breakdown in the district or between the district and the EPA in getting your own plan approved, which could include local rulemaking authority. Instead, the EPA had to come in and maybe some others to sort of push this process along, which resulted then in whether it's legal or just informal, memorandum of understanding to get the process completed. Is there anything in the record as to why the district did not fulfill its responsibilities earlier?
That is a long question.
Okay, maybe not appropriate for here then.
It just didn't happen, and I don't want to point fingers, but we were unable to get that done. We couldn't get approval from the EPA, and it's a long history. But the one point I would make is that the director of the EPA testified. He said that it's a matter of discretion whether the EPA will prepare the plan under these circumstances. And he had exercised that discretion to not step in and write that plan for a long time. We went to him to negotiate that. We believe that a joint amended plan was an exercise of that discretion not to do so, because that does have some effect of overriding some elements of our authority. So that's point one. But point two, the question of whether when the director prepares the amended plan that overrides us, I think is his interpretation is not correct. But that's a complicated analysis of the statute. What the statute says is that when you prepare an amended plan, you may not provide for authority to adopt local rules. Adopt local rules. That's distinct. That then carries over to our authority, which says you may, if to the extent you're authorized, you may adopt and enforce. Enforcement and adoption are separate functions. We need a plan that authorizes adoption, but there's no requirement that we have a plan that authorizes enforcement. That is an implicit power that goes with adoption. So I believe he's incorrect. When the director steps in and says, I'm going to do an amended plan, and I cannot put in a provision to adopt, it doesn't affect existing rules. We've got existing rules in place. This begs the question, why would you need to authorize adoption of rules that have already been adopted? It is not a logical position. And I don't believe the statutes require that. That's what is being argued. There's many other provisions that go to that point. an amended plan is defined. All these plans are defined by statute. You can't add in what you want. It says that when you amend a plan, you may add elements of authority that you have not had in a previous plan, your initial plan. You may delete elements of authority. There's nothing in there that says you've got to reiterate authority for plans that you've already adopted. Arguably, you can't even include what he's suggesting should be done.
You need to sum up. Your red light has been on.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your summation.
Yes, Your Honor. No. Trying to absorb it all. I think the big focus is that we do have the power under for our recycling rule, under our broad purpose to manage the use, and under our rulemaking authority for the same purpose. We, in good faith, went to the EPA to get an agreement to define some complicated statutes. They said you can adopt those rules up to the day before we put this amended plan in. It would be completely unreasonable to say that that agreement meant you could have a rule that would last only one day.
Thank you. Mr. Fay, you've used your time, but you may start with a minute.
Justice Pfeiffer's, or excuse me, Pfeiffer's question is the critical one here. What is the impact of these kinds of rules where one district gets to keep another district's waste out? The legislature thought about this when it adopted the scheme back in 1988. And what it said was, the districts have broad rulemaking power to do this, that, and the other, as Mr. Connors has alluded to in 343.01G2. But it also said, but when it comes to keeping each other's waste out, it may only do that when it needs the local capacity to deal with local disposal needs. Nobody wants a landfill in their backyard, Your Honor. The court can take judicial notice of that.
Well, but keeping it out as opposed to saying, okay, we want you to segregate certain products, and we'll handle those differently. It's different from keeping it out altogether.
And I agree with you, Your Honor, but that's not what's at issue here. This rule keeps Cleveland's and Akron's waste out of Stark, Tusk, Wayne. The legislature looked at this. The legislature was—
Well, if that's what it does, where's the EPA director in all of this?
Well, the EPA director entered into a memorandum of understanding that he testified was neutral on the subject of whether the district could or could not do this. But you don't need to rely on testimony.
Well,
these are questions
of
law.
If it had the cataclysmic effect of shutting down the movement of waste from those major metropolitan areas, one would think that the EPA director would be in this lawsuit.
Well, that is a political question, Your Honor. I don't know why EPA is not in this lawsuit. Well, all I know
it's a practical question. I mean, if the practicality is as you suggest, then it's more than a political question. I mean, it becomes enormous practical and political problem for the state if the outcome would be as you suggest, and the absence of the EPA director here having their lawyer banging on the podium articulating the problems seems to me to be inexplicable.
With the chief's indulgence, I'll answer that and sit down.
You may answer it and
then
sit
down.
Thank you,
Your Honor. All I know is the legislature thought about whether the districts would be allowed to keep each other's waste out and said yes under one limited circumstance, when they need local disposal capacity to dispose of local waste. And the record is replete with evidence that establishes that's not the case here. And what you're talking about, Justice Pfeiffer, is indeed the risk here. If the districts are allowed to do this, and if EPA by contract can sanction it as in violation of the statutes, then that is indeed the risk. And that's why my clients are before the court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.